Saturday, December 26th, 2015. Just wait. There really isn't anything difficult about Dhamma practice. When we see just the normal and natural way of the body, the normal and natural way of the mind will release, let go of body and the mind. Then whatever happens in the body and the mind will not suffer as a result. And keep practicing until we let go, and we let go because of wisdom, understanding the truth of body and the mind. We can let go because of mindfulness, we can let go because of morality. But it's letting go of out of wisdom that is the true way of releasing. The mind releases itself. No one can order this to happen or make this happen. It's an extraordinary phenomenon. See, when we're older, we have to drink a lot of tea because old people make a lot of different noises, clearing their throats and stuff like that. People get annoyed by older people because of all their noises. Everybody's getting lost. Oh. The whole room's gone away. There was a monk that disrobed to do some duties in the world. It's a temporary monk. He practiced 20 days with Longpa. He was able to see the mind moving out. The mind would move out and he would know it. He asked, "Can I just keep practicing like this?" Longpa said, "Yes, you can just keep practicing like that, because when we see the mind moving out, we get to remember what that state is like. And so that is mindfulness. When the mind moves out, and we know so, then not only do we learn what that phenomenon is like and gain mindfulness, but we also, when the mind sees the mind move, then it becomes of correct concentration. It becomes the stable observer. And once the mind is the stable observer, we can watch the body and mind do what they do and see the truth of them. Someone ordained as a monk here because he thought that Longpa would teach him every day. But that's not the case. He treats the monks like adults, not like kids. He doesn't teach them very much. And also he's quite strict with them, much different than teaching lay people. If you've become a monk, you have to be your own teacher most of the time. Don't sit there and ask me a bunch of questions. It's a waste of time. Just see your own phenomena that are arising. Learn on your own. So this monk, just only 20 days with him, was able to see the mind moving out. So that's enough. The idea that we have to do so many different things in order for the mind to enlighten, that is a fallacy. Then we start doing all kinds of different things trying to make it happen, and that is creating a lot of fabrication, a lot of creating in the good direction, trying to make the mind a better thing. These people wake up in the morning, think, oh, how should I practice? What should I practice today? What should I do to make the mind better? But actually, we're being deceived. It is a kind of an illusion, a delusion of meditation or Dhamma practitioners thinking that they have to do things, engage in practices, rather than just knowing and feeling what is actually going on in the present moment. Trying to do anything more than that. We're able to notice that the body is breathing now, aren't we? Not have to change it. It's very simple. But then when we think, some people teach anapanasati, the breathing mindfulness of the in and out breath. And a lot of people teach these techniques. You have to put this foot pointing in this way, and this, the left foot has to be pointing to the sky. This is all ridiculous. There was a great monk once that thought that stuff was ridiculous and said, hey, our head pointing to the floor, our head up in the sky doing feet up in the sky doing a headstand, we could still practice the Dhamma. Reading the Buddhist scriptures, we don't see anything that says what technique of how you're supposed to sit or any sort of step-by-step technique in these ways that people create. The Buddha said, have a sit, sit straight. If the body's breathing out, know it's breathing out. If the breath is breathing in, know it's breathing in. Nothing more than that. Very simple. And why was everyone sitting on the floor? Because they didn't have chairs out there where they were practicing. If you're sitting on the floor, sitting cross-legged is the best for your bones. So sit in a way that is mindful, he said. You know, don't fall asleep. Don't go into and then just know what is happening at the fore. When the breath is long, breathing out long, know it's breathing out long. When it's breathing in, know that it's breathing in long. The Buddha didn't say, notice as the breath touches the nostril and then inner nose and then in the throat. The Buddha didn't teach any of these techniques. Now, for some people, if they have a really busy mind, it can be helpful to notice the breath moving here, hitting there, bringing the breath into the stomach, noticing it going back up and out, back to the rim of the nose. This type of technique can be helpful for some people that are busy. It's a bit of a tactic, a bit of a method that is helpful for a few people, for some people. For some people, they do that and they feel annoyed. But that doing things like these techniques, they're not the correct principles of the practice. They're just some tactics that may be assistance at some points, at some times, but they're not the principles of the practice. Ultimately, just breathe out. The mind will feel comfortable. If we breathe in, if we start by breathing in, we might feel too tight, as if we breathe in as we're about to engage in something strong, we're about to start a fight. Don't breathe in first. Don't make... You notice when you sigh, when you make a sigh when you're feeling stressed, it helps you to feel more relaxed. See, the out-breath is more relaxing than the in-breath. So breathe out first. And you start. Whatever's left in your lungs, breathe it out. Relax. Often in Buddhism, people teach to breathe in first. Breathe in, breathe out, breathe in, breathe out. But actually, that makes you tighter than breathe out first. There's always some breath left in our lungs, even if it's just a little bit. So let's start by noticing the out-breath. Feel a little bit more relaxed. So the Buddha said, sit straight, have mindfulness at the fore, which sort of means being alert, and then the out-breath is breathing long, know it, the out-breath, the in-breath is long, know it, similar walking. You're walking meditation. They teach all kinds of things. You have to lift your heel first, and then lift your whole foot, and then sliding, and then down. You don't have to do it step by step. The Buddha said, if you're walking, know you're walking. That's it. You stop, know you're stopped. You turn left, turn right, know you're turning left, turning right. Right? So even if we have a cane, we can walk. It's the only important thing is that the body is moving and the mind is the one that sees it. We always sit, walk, lie down, stand. These are things that the body does anyway. So now we just come to be aware that this is happening. The Buddha taught monks, if the mind is happy, know so. If the mind is unhappy, know so. If the mind is neutral, know so. We were sitting. An ant bites us. We feel pain. Know that we feel pain. What do most of us do when we're sitting? We don't look at the pain. We look at the ant, and we seek revenge upon the ant. We don't see... Why do we see the pain? Why is it that we should come to see the pain? Because we see that the pain is something, is a stranger that comes in and then leaves. The body was there without pain. Then there was pain. Then it goes away. We don't sit in order to make the pain go away, sit in meditation and try to make the pain go away. Let pain perform its function, which is making pain. But we're not. That's not why we're practicing to make the pain go away. We're practicing to see that the pain is not the body. The pain is not the mind. The pain is not the feelings of the mind. The pain is not us. None of these aspects, these aggregates, are us. Once before he was a monk, him and his wife were in a van leaving Bangkok to go to Thot Katin festival up to Luang Tha Mahabua's temple. I didn't know anybody in the van. They said that they wouldn't pick up any people, or they wouldn't stop, but they stopped tons. It was really annoying. So everybody was laughing. He doesn't want to go with those people anymore. Then they stopped somewhere overnight. He felt so much pain from sitting in the van for so long. He had to sit sideways. He couldn't sit straight. He couldn't lie down. He had a lot of pain in his muscles. The monk there let him stay in a hut by himself. He didn't have any medicines. And he was in so much pain. And he thought to himself, he wished. Doesn't feel well at all. Feels sick. Feels awful. He wished, can the angels hear? If you've ever made merit together, can you help me, angels? He said after he made the wish, there was some sort of a light there. And then after he made the wish, the light flashed, and then went out. He then lied down. Take a look and see. And the body is suffering. He was his body was hurting, but the sort of sadness about the pain disappeared, and his heart felt beautiful. And the body was in pain. The heart was beautiful and bright. He said that was a time I saw that angels actually helped me. Anyway, let's keep practicing. Feel within this body and this mind. Be aware of these things. Practice in a relaxed way. Let the body work as it does, let the mind work as it does, and let's not interfere. Let's be aware in a relaxed way, and it won't take long until we see the truth that physical and mental phenomena are not us. Some people understand vipassana wrongly. They think that it's about thinking. Thinking is called vitakka. It's not called vipassana, something else. The word vi means clearly. Passana is seeing. So thinking is not vipassana. It's clearly seeing or perceiving. Some people think that if they think about the different aspects of the body, then they can achieve different levels of enlightenment. But thinking isn't vipassana. But some people need a tactic of thinking for a while. It helps bring the mind to the right state. It's a way to stimulate wisdom, actual wisdom from happening. This is for some people a very safe way to think. For example, if we're discriminating or considering the truth of the body, is to see that the body is something that is filled with filth, that it's disgusting, not thinking that it's something beautiful. Who thinks that that dog poo is disgusting? Of course we think it's disgusting. None of us think it's something beautiful. But do you know that flies think that dog poo is something beautiful? Right? When flies see dog poo, they think it's beautiful. It smells wonderful. They take a deep, big breath in. They enjoy it. You see, ideas that the mind is, that the body is filthy or the body is beautiful, we can't use for vipassana, because they're things that are, that we could have different that we can have different perspectives of. They're not ultimately right or wrong. So our thoughts aren't reliable for vipassana. However, it doesn't matter who is practicing. If we see the mind, we can see that the mind is always moving and changing. The feelings are always moving and changing. It doesn't matter who we are. These are true phenomena, independent of thought. So when we're practicing vipassana, we have to see the truth of mental and physical phenomena. So we have to be strong. We have to learn. Once we get the principles, we have to become researchers. We become researchers of our own body and mind, studying them. We can't depend on our teachers all the time, having others show us our own minds. We have to see our own minds. So practice the five precepts of morality, and then other than that, let the body and mind be natural and be aware of what they do. The body standing, sitting, lying down, walking, be aware of it. The mind is happy, sad, neutral, no so. Any defilements arise in the mind, no so. The mind moves to the eyes to see, to the ears to hear, no so. Be aware of it. If any of us are able to see the movement of the mind to the thoughts, to the eyes, to the ears, then let's practice that, because it's a very small thing, but it encapsulates so much of the teachings, because we're able to achieve correct mindfulness and correct concentration, samadhi. Correct samadhi from seeing this movement of the mind. So if we're able to see the mind, then see it. Watch it. If at any time we cannot see the mind, then watch the body. And if at any time we can't see the watch the body, then practice samatha. Do some meditation. The principles are very simple for samatha. Just for samatha meditation, we just take a happy, comfortable heart and apply it to an object that we like, that we're happy with. It won't take long at all, and the mind becomes comfortable, peaceful. It has to be an object that is a moral object, that is an object that makes us feel happy, that we like. It has to be an object that doesn't lure the defilements to come up, a wholesome and moral choice. And we have to have a heart that is comfortable, that watches it. If we're stressed or strained or trying too hard, it won't work. And as far as practicing to have the stable observer, the observer mind in correct concentration, we learn to make the mind the stable observer. We have to see the mind that isn't the stable observer. The mind that isn't the stable observer is the mind that moves out. So, the type of samadhi, this is the type of samadhi that we use all the way to enlightenment. Who cannot see the mind moving out? Raise your hand. Who still can't see the mind that moves out to the thought, to the eyes, to the ears, and these things? You can put your hands down now. Some people were scared to put up their hand. Everybody's nervous now, wondering if they're able to see the mind moving out or not. So when we're nervous like that, we're not going to see it. It isn't difficult. The mind moves out, we notice. When the mind moves out, we become aware of it. Right? We could be practicing Budo, Budo, Budo in our mind. And then it won't take long and the mind will move away from it. And we'll be able to see that. So we just pick a meditation object and it won't take long and the mind will move to something else. And let's be aware when it has. Yeah, Budo, Budo, Budo. Forgot Budo. The mind went out to think about something else. And we practice to see this when it happens. Just practicing this, we can get all the way to the end. That Lung Pa would watch the movement of all formations at the center of the chest after his mind had achieved the stable observer. Once we are, when we don't know how to practice correctly, it doesn't matter what we do, it's always wrong. And when we're practicing well, everything we seem to practice is easy. He just asked, who thinks that it's hard? Raise your hand. And if you, yeah, and then if you think that it's hard, just know that you feel that it's hard. That's all you have to do. Just keep practicing and you'll be able to practice okay. If you're able to see phenomena, if you're able to see phenomena in the present moment and you're able to see the truth of them, then, you know, it's just a countdown to enlightenment, because that's the way. The only exceptions are people who have vowed to be bodhisattvas. They've decided to not enlighten, to compassionate, care about other beings too much, and will refuse enlightenment in the face of it. That's the bodhisattvas. The other group that can't enlighten are those that have done terrible sins, like killing their parents or harming a Buddha, harming an Arahant. So if we're not too good, like a Bodhisattva, or too bad, like someone who has done tremendous evils, then as long as we're seeing the truth of body and mind, then the mind will enlighten at some point on its own. It's time for lunch. The monks are hungry. Remember, the monks haven't eaten since yesterday morning, not like us.